Look, we all have different ways of responding to grief. Heaven forbid it should happen before its time, but of course, all of us, it is an intrinsic part of life, dealing with the death of our parents, our friends, God forbid, our children, and those younger than us. Jane Fisher is here to map out the steps out of grief. Hi there, Jane.
Hello, Raph.
She's the Jean Hales Professor of Women's Mental Health at Monash University. We call this Life and Other Catastrophes. If you want to listen to previous instalments, just go to the 774 homepage. Jane, I don't know, how do you... I suppose the good question is, can you prepare for grief?
Well, I think the first step is to understand that grief is really an unavoidable process. And it's a process that has components, but they don't really follow a neat step-by-step pattern. But to accept that grief can't really be avoided, and grief is an inevitable process that accompanies loss.
That sort of anger.
Well, it's really a process of which anger can be a part. Anger and protest can be a part, but so too can disbelief and shock and yearning for what has been lost or the person that's been lost. Mm. Really deep sorrow and sadness, but ultimately also a capacity to live with this changed reality, recalling the person who has died, but not necessarily always feeling sad in that recollection. And it's really that process of a pathway forward from grief that we're interested in hearing about today.
Yeah. Look, 1300 222 774. I would love to know... if you've got ideas on what helps for you, it might be music, it might be books, it might be prayer, it might be devising your own ritual. Whatever it was that helped you, you are the best resource the rest of us have. We all have to prepare for it in its many and varied shades. So grief, what's the best way to deal with it? You can also text 0437 774 774 and the phone number 1300 222 774. Jane, what... It sounds silly, but what can we expect?
Well, I think some forms of grief are anticipated. If someone reaches the end of their life after they've had a long and full life, you will still feel very sad that their life has ended, but in a sense it is anticipated. Mm. And to some extent the same can be said of people who die after a serious life-limiting illness, that yeah. there is a period during which you have to begin to entertain this idea that yes. The person might die.
Yeah.
But probably one of the most difficult forms of grief is grief that follows more traumatic bereavement. Mm. So the people in America whose family members were killed in the cinema will be experiencing this grief that was never anticipated, yeah. that's premature, that's entirely unjust and couldn't have been prepared for. And that's a particularly difficult form of loss to experience, and yet people experience it every day. Mm. Motor vehicle accidents, children's deaths. And then there's what's called disenfranchised or unrecognised grief, and this is particularly difficult grief because it's grief for which there's no public recognition. And this is grief of different kinds. Women often talk about this if they have a miscarriage before they've declared the pregnancy, so they have this private form of loss. It's a loss that's been described if someone has a relationship that's not known to others and the relationship ends.
Ah,
they
yeah.
experience an
yes.
unrecognized form of loss. So great. We experience many losses, and really one of the realities is if you want to experience love, you also have to be open to the reality of experiencing loss.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Look, we'll go to a few of your calls. A few other concepts I'd love to explore. You often hear people too talking about a good death and
yeah.
a bad death,
yeah.
and
yeah.
I'm fascinated
yeah.
by that.
I'm
very reluctant to make the judgment, but it is obviously something that people. Mm. People can feel and relate to. Let's have a word to Amanda. Who are you travelling down Hoddle Street? Are you Amanda?
Yes, I am. Raph, how are you?
I'm well. What did you want to say?
A really dear friend of mine died about 16 years ago, and it was devastating. He was my childhood sweetheart, and I loved him dearly. And he died in a car accident, and I deliberately listened to the soppiest, most romantic, tragic radio that I could possibly, or music that I could possibly listen to. And I tried to imagine that these were actually words that he was, the comfort that he was giving me from the other side. I knew it was nonsense, of course, but it was enormously comforting to me. And I did it for you know, a few years, to be honest with you. I mean, I wasn't tragic for a few years, but it was really, really comforting to me to have known that other people that had written these songs had obviously felt loss as well.
And why, what's the music connection? Did you listen to music with him a lot, or it was just your way of getting through it?
I think it was just my way of getting through it, really. I mean, we did listen to music together, but I think it was, yeah, it was just a need to find comfort in some sort of, I don't know, just knowing someone else had been through that kind of pain was really comforting. And even now I can listen to songs from that time, and it's a happy reminder now.
I think you refer to some really important things here, Amanda, which is, first of all, that grief often transcends words, and often it's very difficult for us to find the words ourselves to describe who we've lost, what it is that's been lost. But sometimes someone else's words in poetry or song can express this for us. And, of course, music itself actually transcends words and can be a very important part of this experience.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, look, thanks, Amanda. Appreciate you calling. Can't be a bad idea to listen to music, can it? Anthony's called in from Pasco Vale. Hi there, Anthony.
Hi, Raph. I lost both my parents a couple of years ago, 6 weeks apart.
Right.
My father, who had been a lifelong husband to my mother, he suffered a heart attack and passed away a week after his heart attack.
Mm.
And on the second day that he was in hospital during that week, my mother was admitted to hospital, and she was subsequently diagnosed later in the week with pancreatic cancer. And it was way too late for her.
Mm.
And I still suffer grief from it, unfortunately.
Of course you do.
Look, one of the things that really helped at the time was the fact that even though it was an exhausting time, that I have young children, and they, having the knowledge that they'd shared time with my parents, and they have really strong memories of my parents, and which they refer to now. They're still just primary school age, my boys, but having them, knowing that they had that connection as well as me, it's a shared experience that we've got between us, and but just the support of my wife and extended family and friends.
You've referred to some very important things here, Anthony, and the first one is, of course, that we are never prepared for these events, especially if they are premature. And I think that's what you've described here, is that both your parents died unexpectedly and then unexpectedly close to each other. And but what you've also identified is that, in a way, seeing your parents live on through your genetic connection to them and through you to your children can be a very powerful way of valuing the lives that have been lost. I don't know if you see characteristics sometimes of your parents in your children, but that is something that people sometimes recognise.
Oh, they're very strong in in both my sons, actually, for sort of different reasons, which is really good. But also, as you've sort of hinted at there, the good thing for me is that while I do have moments where I'm, you know, sort of quite upset about, you know, things that crop up in my memory, I've always got a positive side to it, which
sure.
is,
yes.
you know, the random comments from my sons about... you know, simple things like the way something smells to, you know, the way something, the way a sandwich has been made or something like that.
That links them, yeah.
Yeah.
And Anthony, can I ask, were the funerals an important part of the process for you? Did that matter, what happened in the funeral? Did it make a difference?
Oh, it did, absolutely. Because particularly for my father, who was a very unassuming person, he was... acknowledged by former work colleagues who this is something I knew about him anyway, but it was certainly reaffirmed to me personally after his funeral by ex-work colleagues who I hadn't seen for several years, because my father was only 70 at the time.
Right.
But that whole opportunity to acknowledge someone's life, and you know, it doesn't whether it's a funeral, doesn't matter whether it's, you know, a religious experience or whatever,
sure.
but the opportunity to have that formal recognition for someone who absolutely deserved the, having their memory, I guess, sort of acknowledged.
Paying tribute to, I guess. Mm-hmm. Look, thanks, Anthony. I appreciate you calling. Good luck with your boys. Let's have a word to Jenny, who's called in from Mount Evelyn. Hi there, Jenny.
Hi, how you going?
I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, good. Look, I just was ringing because we lost our little boy just on 22 months ago, really suddenly. And I'm finding that I don't, like this thing, like I know that an earlier listener was talking about listening to music and stuff, but for me, I haven't been able to do that sort of thing yet. But I know that there'll be time where I'll be able to. But I think for me, dealing with the shock and the grief, because he was 33 months, so he was, you know, he hadn't yet reached three.
Terrible experience for you.
Look, it was shocking, and I think part of my experience is dealing with the flashbacks of what had happened and scenes in the hospital and that sort of thing, but also acknowledging that this is a really long process, a lifelong process.
I think that's a very important point you make, that grief isn't really ever finished.
No.
You will always recall your little boy with sadness, but in addition, in time, it would be hoped that you'd begin to recall the joyful things that he brought to your life.
That's
too.
That's right. And look, we do. I think you have your good days and your bad days, and I've got two little kids with me now, and so they sort of fill my life with, you know, with love again and happiness and joy and all that sort of stuff. And so I do. Me and my partner, we laugh and we still see the good in life, but then there are moments of great sadness. And I think I've just, my learning is that with every joy now in life, there'll always be a deep sadness, but that's just the way it is, I guess, and it's just part of the process of our lives. And yeah.
And Jenny, what helped at the time? I'm just curious to know, with the doctors and undertakers and all that. What, when people spoke to you, what was the best thing they could say?
Well, everyone, I think it was just most people just said, "This is a lot. Your lives are forever changed," and that. So I think initially too, we were in great shock for several weeks too, because I was 6 months pregnant at the time with my second child.
Wow.
And so there was also part of, in my situation, where I had to keep going because I was pregnant. So I didn't have a choice to drop my bundle, even though there were times that I did. But I think initially there was just, I don't remember a lot because we were in deep, deep shock. So the advice of doctors and that sort of thing, I can't really recall.
Sure.
But it was just, we got help from SIDS and Kids, who were brilliant. They came to our aid within a couple of weeks. And we got the help of a really brilliant private psychologist who was still... I still have regular contact with.
Great.
So I think it was just reaching out and knowing that we were going to be in a big crisis, so we needed help. Yeah.
Okay. Look, thanks so much, Jenny. Good luck with your other children. I really appreciate you ringing and talking with us. Just a few of your text messages, and then we'll keep going with your calls. 1300 222 774. It's coming up to 4:13 on 774 ABC Melbourne. Jane Fisher and Raphael Epstein are with you. A few of your texts. Make sure the funeral is a celebration. Perform and sing music. Positive memories of a funeral helps. That's from Nick in North Fitzroy. And disenfranchised grief. You must acknowledge the grief of unmarried mothers who had their infant stolen at birth purely because they were seen as unsuitable mothers because they weren't married. Mm. That's from Pauline. Yes, there's been a lot of focus on that.
Yeah, and an incredibly important example of how grief was actually caused by the system and by our values at that time. And Pauline's absolutely right that this is a profound source of unrecognised grief to the child, to the relinquishing mother, and that it hasn't been recognised adequately.
Hopefully we're going some way towards helping with that. Let's have a word to Benjamin, who's called in from Mornington. Hi there, Benjamin.
Hi, how are we going?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. My wife died May 2008. That was very sudden, from a brain aneurysm. And at the funeral, actually, that is somebody raised, I think you raised that. It is a good thing to look at the positives. And we had 9.5 years together, and I just spoke about the great life we had together, and really good to get that off my chest. Then in the in the first month, I think I walked around in a complete daze, wondering what had happened, and started thinking, well, what was I before this sudden thing happened? I thought, well, I actually used to box, so I went back to training and tried to get myself healthy. So, I mean, I was very healthy when she died, but for the first month, health was the last thing I really ate. And
so what was important there? Was it being healthy, or was it important for you to become or to recapture a little bit of what you were before you met her? Was that the significant thing?
I think not just before I met her, but just before she died. I was a happy person, just a healthy, happy person. And I thought if I can focus on becoming that again, at least I can see where I'm going and try to move forward that way. And I did. I met another girl, another woman, I should say, and things went very well. I'm married again, and she's six months pregnant.
Oh, beautiful.
Well, this is a very good story, that the fact that you've married again and that you're forming a family with your new wife doesn't mean that you've forgotten this precious relationship you had with your first wife. And I think that's a very important illustration of how grief gradually leads to being able to recall the person, but that your life continues because life continues in you.
Oh, definitely. She has been she's handled my situation with the utmost respect. It was very hard. My wife, my dead wife's family, they sort of looked at, or certain family members looked at it as a betrayal. But interesting, of all the people that she would have been with before me, that, good luck to them, they can move on with their life. But the person who lost the most the day she died, that's the one that has to be by themselves forever, which is just a ridiculous statement. But it almost felt like that. It still feels like that.
Okay. Well, best wishes.
Yeah, look, good luck, Benjamin. Sorry, your phone line is breaking up a bit there. Good luck with your former partner's family and good luck with the new child. Let's have a word with... before we do, sorry, there's a great text here. I took up learning to play my dad's violin after he died. It made me feel like there was a part of him still with me. I absolutely love playing it and it calms me now whenever I am stressed. Fascinating. Let's have a word to Philip, who's called in from Essendon. Hi there, Philip.
Oh, hello. Good afternoon. I'm not sure what your program is about, whether it's only about grief after death, but...
It's about whatever you want to talk about.
Okay, well, my grief. I had a partner about 8 years ago, and I was travelling in a car behind her, and she was driving her car, and she fell asleep at the wheel and ploughed into the oncoming car, so a combined speed of 220, and there was just a cloud of dust. And by the time I got out of the car, she was just a jelly. But she died. And then several years later, my son died of an overdose of heroin, and I was the one that found him. Now, they were traumatic, obviously. However, just 6 months ago, I lost a lady who I was with for 4 years, and love of my life. And I thought you might have something to say about that, because I have found, because she is still alive...
You mean you broke up with her, Philip?
Yes, sorry. Yes,
right.
I broke up with
Understood.
Her. Okay. So because she's still alive, I could, within 15, 20 minutes, go and see her walking along the street. However, she's the one that broke up with me.
So you're finding that grief more grief, difficult than your son and your former partner's
Would
death.
Would you believe that? That's true.
Well, I think the hallmark of the grief that follows the ending of a relationship is it's made much worse because of the pain of rejection.
That's it.
And death that occurs as a result of bereavement. The dying person usually doesn't choose to die. They don't choose to leave you, but
That's
in
right.
the ending of a relationship, they do. Yes. And that adds this particular dimension of pain, I think, that you're describing.
That's something I hadn't thought of, the rejection. I was thinking more of the fact that they're still there, and you think there might be some way of mending it, but it's the pain of rejection, I suppose, too, isn't it?
And Philip, you're surprised that's hit you harder, aren't you?
I am, and it has. It's the hardest thing in my life. I'm nearly 70, and you start to wonder, that was the love of my life. Are you ever going to get that again? Never, probably, and if you've lost it, you know what I mean?
And do you also feel like you got to 70 and you're supposed to have accumulated some sort of wisdom, I suppose, and yet you're confounded by that experience?
That's right, exactly. So I thought that the fact that someone's still alive, and in a situation like that, perhaps that happens to a lot of people, in breakups of marriages and so forth, that can be even worse, I think.
I think it can be unbelievably painful, and it can destabilise you for a long time. But the important thing to hold fast for is if you've experienced love, it always means you can experience it again.
That's what I'm coming around to.
You can't always know in what form it will be or where you will find it, but it is always a possibility.
Yes, I agree with you. I'm getting over that business of saying I'm too old for it.
No, you're never too old, Philip.
Never too old.
But, Philip, maybe also, do you ever wonder, too, if there's a part of you that hasn't dealt with or processed the death you've had in your life, and maybe that's part of your grief now?
I've got a feeling that is true, because I've been to a psychologist, and I can't remember the name they put on it, but it's a kind of a depression that just hangs over like a cloud over you because of what you've been through over the last 10 years.
Sometimes that's called complicated grief, and I think it's really good that you're getting some professional assistance to make sense of that.
That's right. So that's interesting what you've said, though. And, well, look, thank you.
That's a pleasure, Philip. Look, good luck. Good luck.
Okay, and there's one more thing.
Oh, look, Philip, I want to try and squeeze in a few more calls.
Yep.
But good luck. Don't stop talking to people about it. And 70 years young. Thank you for calling. Let's have a word to Anthony, who's called from Ballarat. Hi there, Anthony.
G'day, Raph. How are you going?
I'm well. What do you want to say?
Look, we're talking about grief and that. I lost my dad in a bizarre set of circumstances. I hadn't seen my dad since I was 18. I'm now 44 now. But I found out only 5 years ago that he'd already been passed away close to 15 years. So my father's been not with me for 20 years. And I had a lot of regret about not seeing him. Because he lived in another town and a lot of circumstances about that. And the complicated issue that I had is, how do I say goodbye to him?
Mm.
Like, he's been left from this earth 15 years ago, and it's been a long 5 years to cope with that journey. But I tell you that it's tested so much of my inner strength and my beliefs. And when people talk about music, I was given a couple of albums back then by a couple of close friends, and those albums are just the most precious things that I have in my life, and the tracks just happened to mirror everything that I was going through.
Yeah, Anthony, your experience is a very sad one to hear about, but what this illustrates, of course, is that grief doesn't come in convenient ways, and it can come in relationships that have been estranged. But one of the most important things, and we've heard about this already this afternoon, is the place of ritual. And not everybody has a religious faith, but there are many ways in which there can be a formalised recognition of the person who's been lost, even if you couldn't be present at the funeral. And I'd really encourage you to discuss with someone how you might be able to have some sort of ritual or ceremony that acknowledges your father's death and its impact on your life.
Yeah, I've spoken to a psychologist, and I've since now have been in contact with his widow, who still has his ashes, which is quite bizarre, that's 20 years on. And I've even spoken to my grandfather, who's in his 90s now, and I am establishing a relationship with his older brother in his 70s.
Okay.
Well, that's good things. Contact.
Yeah, lots of positive things and that have come out of it. Like, I lost my marriage 6 weeks after that as well. So,
Anthony, okay.
Well,
as I say, stuff happens, but it is there to teach you to be a better person, and I honestly believe that.
Okay. Look, good luck, Anthony. I appreciate you taking the time to give us a call. Look, I just want to squeeze in one more call. There's so many of you, but we don't have too much time before the news. Julie's called from East Melbourne. Hi, Julie.
Oh, good afternoon. An aspect of grief that I would like is the loss of a much-loved pet. I went through what I would call normal grieving process of two much-loved parents and a grandma who died.
Mm-hmm.
However, when my daily companion, my Labrador, died after 12 years, it was a grief I couldn't overcome, and it's taken 2 years. I went to my GP, and I said, you know, this is ridiculous. I've got to get over that. And the GP burst into tears because she was suffering from the same grief I was, which made me feel relatively normal. She said, it is just terrible and time is the only thing. And it is a different aspect to grieving.
But I think what your experience illustrates is that some forms of grief are better recognised than others and they attract support and there are formalised rituals that accompany them. But the loss of a pet is not usually that. There isn't a form of ritual like a funeral for a pet, and it's often not well recognised by others. And that makes this grief, I think, even more difficult.
Very valid point. I hadn't really thought about that one. If there had been something, yes.
But it's never too late to create something, Julie.
Thank you.
Good luck, Julie. Sorry to end it there, but we have the news approaching. Jane Fisher, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.